Peter and the Starcatcher opens this week at Clarence Brown Theater, and it's a prequel of sorts to the story of Peter Pan. The play features music, a monster, and a considerable number of scene and costume changes. I spoke to the director, Casey Sams, and scenic designer, Chris Pickert, about the technical challenges for the crew and for the actors in the play. So I'm here with Casey Sams and Chris Pickert. Thank you for joining us. I want to ask, first of all, reading about the staging of this play, I realized it feels like a movie. So what sort of technical challenge are presented when there's so many scene changes in such a short time frame?
Yeah, it's you're right. It's a very cinematic structure. So one of the things that we have to do is figure out how to get from one location to another location very quickly. And we can do that with high technology. But in this particular case, we didn't want to do it that way. We wanted to do it with low technology. So lots of times it has less to do with what the environment is doing and more to do with what the actors are doing. So, you know, they'll be facing one direction and then they'll say, and now we're on a different ship, and everybody just turns and faces the other way. You know, so it's a more kind of playful and imaginative way of getting from one place to another. But it audiences are so used to editing and having images cut from one view to another view that that I think they understand the cut when you do it in movement on stage.
Right, right. You know, the thing is, it's like when you read a play, it's tricky. Because you can fool yourself. And normally designers start off by themselves and read the play and sort of come up with ideas and try to feel how the play moves. With this play, I found that I had to read it aloud to myself because you can trick yourself into thinking, oh, there's more of a substantial location here needed when in fact it's a 30-second scene. So really, this is probably one of the first plays where I got halfway through it and I called Casey and said, I can't do this by myself. So we literally had to sit for, you know, 2 or 3 days over the course of some time and go through it moment by moment in order to decide and, you know, what was needing scenic support and what wasn't. And quickly we found that probably almost 3/4 of some of the initial ideas just were too much and they got in the way. So this was a really unique experience because often designers don't need to, you know, have every move thought through when they're just beginning. But this play really requires that.
The play is not really a musical, but there are songs. What can you tell me about that?
It feels like a musical in a lot of ways, and it's structured like a musical. And I'm mostly a musical director, so I've approached it that way. It just happens that they don't burst into song quite as often as you do in a regular musical. But there's underscoring through most of the play, and there's lots and lots and lots of sound effects.
Right.
Like well over 500. So the soundscape of what's going on is just as involved as it is in a regular musical.
The story's imbued with imagination as well. It calls upon the viewers in the very beginning with the line, suppose all these planks and ropes are now the British Empire, use your thoughts to hoist the sails and the deck, deck the ships awaiting us. How does that influence the sets and lighting design?
Well, you know, whenever we work, it has to come from the script. I wouldn't be in this business. I draw pictures for a living, but I wouldn't just want to draw pictures. To me, it's figuring out what, you know, clues the script gives. And honestly, there's never been a bigger clue than the lines you just stated. And I think, you know, it's like a hammer that if I ignored it, it would come down on my head. And so I personally, that's one of my favorite ways to design. I often, when I'm describing what I've designed to other people, say, wow, I just designed a really big and expensive bear stage. because, you know, I've given stuff to surround and give mood and to play with, but ultimately it's boxes moving and actors carrying things that are telling us where we are. So honestly, when I read the first lines of the play, I was thrilled, you know, because it's just imagination. It can be so much more fun than you know, having to describe every inch to the audience visually.
Right, than having helicopters land on stage.
Exactly.
Or giant chandeliers
exactly.
crushed. Which is all cool. I mean, don't get me
sure,
wrong, that's fun
sure.
stuff.
But the nature of theater, I mean, Shakespeare, you know, tells us where we are so that you can just use a bench.
Funny story, my first Broadway experience was actually Miss Saigon.
Yeah.
On first run, too.
Oh, wow.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
Without giving away too much, there are essentially special effects in the play, things like a glowing amulet, maybe something we all know Peter's famous for. So how do you approach challenges like that?
The one of the big elements in this play is star stuff, which is magical and powerful, and it falls from the sky, and star catchers have to collect it before the evil people find it. So what is star stuff, and how do we make it? And that's been a challenge for our lighting designer to figure out how to imbue the stage with a quality of light that feels magical and present, but, you know, just doesn't feel like a laser pointer. It's been a challenge for our props and costume people, figuring out how to design pieces like necklaces and mm-hmm. that and light up and in a way that has that kind of magical quality. And then we have Tinkerbell who appears, and Tinkerbell is sort of living light. So how do we do that? How do we make light sort of dash around the stage? And gosh, I could tell you, but if I told you, I'd have to shoot you. So no, it's you need to come see the show and see how all of those things fit together. But it's hopefully going to be beautiful and magical and. Good storytelling, that's always the goal.
Speaking of which, the play is very much an ensemble production with actors doubling up on characters. What does this collaborative style require of actors?
Energy. It's just a hard show to get through. Right now, in our rehearsal process, we are just now getting into full runs of the show. And I think the actors are registering on how hard it is to mm-hmm. just go the whole way through and have energy at the end. So part of it is stamina. Part of it is a crazy amount of imagination and a sense of play that they need to enliven the every moment of the play, really, with their own sense of fun and engagement. So part of what I'm asking them to do is pay really, really close attention to each other so that when somebody kind of floats an idea out there, everybody can pick up on it and play with it, but still be attentive to what the story is doing and what needs to be heard. And it's a lot of fun to be in rehearsal. Honestly, the first couple weeks, I felt more like an air traffic controller. It was more like, you guys go here, you raise your arms here. There's sections that we affectionately refer to as Star Trek acting, where people just kind of fling themselves from one side of the stage to the other side of the stage in an organized way. So a lot of that was me just saying, you have to do this now. But now we've entered the part of rehearsal where it's less about my saying, you need to do this, and more about my saying, so what's a more fun way to do it than the way I originally told you? And and they're having a blast with that and really rising to the challenge.
Yeah, and I'd like to add, I stopped into a rehearsal last night because given the fact that this play is so collaborative, and one of the things that I love most in theater is the sort of transition from the director owning the play to the actors owning the play. And what I noticed last night, at times, them starting to get that. And there were times when they cracked each other up on stage because someone was trying something new. And they'll get over that, of course, once they get to an audience, but maybe not, because this play is, of that kind of spirit. And so it was just wonderful to watch a group of people that trust each other and really are enjoying what they're doing, because that's half the fun of this play. It's a wink, wink, nod, nod to the audience, and I think that will show.
And scenes exist from the small, like a dungeon, to vast open seas and a jungle. How do you create a sense of space on the stage using finite resources?
Well, this is where, because what I love most about theater, as I said, I love to play in the artistic world, but I don't like to play by myself. And one of the things that I love about theater is, we have these teams. So I've always said that five heads are better than one. So, I will think about, well, I know they need to be in a dungeon. And so, maybe there's some grates on the floor, which there will be. And then, Casey can stage them so they're huddled together. And then the lighting designer will step in and do his magic. And, or her, if it's a female, but it's Kenton Yeager in this case. And they'll find a way to sort of, focus in. And I, like to call those close-up moments. And it's much more successful when it's a crossfade as opposed to a scene change. Does that make sense? And I think, I'm looking forward to what he does when we get into, putting that part up.
And then finally, there's only one female in the cast, but not in the story. It takes place during the time of Queen Victoria, if I'm not mistaken.
God save her.
And that's at a time when women were supposed to be seen and not heard. How does Molly handle earning the respect of the boys?
Molly. She is a Victorian woman in the sense that she has a very clear sense of what is right and what is wrong. But she is also an adventurer. She feels to me more in the spirit of those Victorian lady travelers who were absolutely proper. Like they would, Isabella Bird would hike across the Rockies. She'd ride a horse across the Rockies, but she'd ride side saddle in a full Victorian garb with head cover and gloves and the full length skirt. So, she wasn't a rabble rouser. She was believed in the ethos of her time. She just didn't believe in the limitations that came with that might have come with her sex, and I think Molly is that kind of person. She's young. She's only 13, so she hasn't really stepped into her own power yet. She's also very bright and fearless.
Yeah.
She's wonderful.
Well, Casey Sams and Chris Pickard, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Peter and the Starcatcher opens tonight and runs through September 17th. For WUOT News, I'm Victor Agretta.